Devin and Morgana have been celebrating midlife love by getting married 100 times in 100 countries. They believe grown-up love gets better and more fun, especially for women. Everyone's smarter, wiser. Men are more relationship-ready. And if they're not, it's obvious. Forget anything you were told about being too old or too late for love and adventure. Instead, get fresh new tips on dating, relating, and travel to exotic destinations. And best of all, call in for personal guidance, creating crazy, sexy midlife love in your life.
And hello, we're back. I'm Morgana. This is my husband, Devin. And this is going to be a little different today because it being Halloween and all, I dubbed it Monster Week. And today's episode, we're going to focus on your money monster. Is your money monster attacking your love life and more? This is actually what I'm best known for. Devin and I, between the two of us, I think we've been relationship coaches for close to 40 years now. But what I'm best known for, what I do day to day, tends to center around relationship with money. And relationship with money is going to show up as attention in your relationship. And we want to get it handled so that it doesn't mess with your love life and the rest of your love life.
Does that mean I get to be here quiet, like turn the key and
fling
it over my shoulder?
You get to just gaze at me with wonder and love.
All right. That's easy. I like that, actually. That sounds like a good plan.
For the last few episodes, we've really been focusing on Devin's wheelhouse, which is communication, ninja communication skills to tame the beast of an insecure woman's heart.
And so probably one of the best ways to do that,
yes,
to reiterate a little bit from last week,
mm-hmm,
is to remain silent and listen. So look at that. I get to demonstrate the wheelhouse this whole episode.
Uh-huh.
Bravo. So I may have a question or two, but I guess I can be here quietly.
That's fine. So it's not like what I do is going to be new or shocking to you. And we might talk about that if we have more time. Also, since I sent out an alert to, you know, my tribe, my 20-something thousand subscribers that I'm doing this, we're totally taking callers and you will not be on camera. Your privacy is protected, especially when we're talking about issues of money. It's really important to protect your privacy and create safety. And actually, the importance of safety is going to be a big theme in what I talk about. Before I dive into the money piece, I was reading a great article earlier today about couples that stay together versus couples that don't. And it was centering on the work of Dr. John Gottman, who was central to my training in relationship coaching 20 years ago. Haven't studied with him personally, but his work was foundational for what I was taught. And one of my favorite things about him is he studied couples empirically, you know, just studied them like lab rats behind one-way mirrors, hooked them up to electrical nodes and just let them be themselves and took down data. And one of the things that he noticed was that couples who are not going to make it versus couples who are, they have different biological responses when they're together. So let's say we as a couple are just sitting, having a conversation with the therapist or whoever, and it may not be different visually. And what we say may not be really different. But if we are a couple who is having trouble, our physiology is like we are on high alert and we're feeling in danger and we are looking for what is wrong in the other person. By the way, that is key. So the couple that is going to stay together may have and usually does have the same number of problems or conflicts, issues, unresolved issues of the same magnitude, like what city to live in, what job to take, have children, not have children, you know, really politics, religion, the money, the big ones. But the couples that are going to stay together have a very different physical response. They are more relaxed. Their bodies are less alert. They find safety in each other. They look for safety in the other. They look for what is right in the other. So it's both of them are kind of like, it's what glasses are you going to wear? What distortion are you going to look at the other with? And I bring that up because this is very similar to how we relate to money. And while a lot of magic and very dramatic results have been attributed to my coaching on this, I'm actually going to be talking to you not so much from a woo-woo angle, because I really want to acknowledge that there's some real stuff going on outside of you that you didn't create with your negative thinking or low vibrations. You did not create COVID. You did not create, you know, outside economic stuff. However, so let's say you're in some really dramatic circumstances. And we can also say that maybe they aren't your fault. In fact, there's a lot of stuff going on that is just sort of outside of your control. Yes. And whatever is going on, we want to make it your responsibility, give you the ability to respond to it, because that's where your power is. And that's where the big breakthroughs and dramatic results that look like magic happen. So starting with relationship with money, I've made notes because this is a different venue than I usually teach this. This is what I teach all the time. One of the things that I found is that if you are doing everything right and still like hitting a wall, it's not just what's going on outside of you. We want to take a look at what is inside of you, especially if your circumstances are really dramatic. And by dramatic, challenging, catastrophic, frightening, traumatic, all that kind of stuff. What we want to do, and what I'm going to be teaching you how to do, is change your relationship with money so that you can feel safe and tap into your genius and resourcefulness and see possibilities before anything outside of you changes. So I'm looking to see if there are any comments, but I can't tell if those will come in here. So where I like to begin is by looking at what is wrong. So this is not going to be a law of attraction class. We're going to go in the other direction before we get to a good relationship with money. We want to start with what is not working. And before I dive in, let's see if there's anything else I really wanted to say. Yeah. If your experience of money, and it could be recent or it could be lifetime, is that, for example, it comes and goes. It can't be trusted. You can't make money doing what you want to do. A really, really big one is you're stuck in a job you hate for the money. One of the reasons that I decided to address the money monster on today's show is I've been in a number of conversations around the problem of women staying in really unhappy and even abusive relationships because of financial dependency, and they don't know how, or they don't have the confidence that they can make money on their own. So it's a really horrible situation for both partners because money for them is abuse. Like the cost of survival for them is abuse. And the guy isn't being loved for himself either, which is also abusive and tragic. And what I would want to see is them part so that they can both find partners who really do love them. But one of the pieces necessary for that is that both parties are financially whole so that they can, so that they aren't being held hostage by money fears. Another topic that's come up in a lot of conversations recently is highly successful women, although this is true for men too, but highly successful women who made a lot of money and lost everything to unscrupulous, dishonest partners. And even if it isn't overtly unscrupulous, sometimes even having money can get in the way of love. I'm thinking of a favorite client from way back around 2004 who came into tens of millions of dollars, and that killed her love life. Like, she came into all this money, thought, great, now I can do all these wonderful things in the world. And her boyfriend of like 15 years said, great, I never have to work again. And that relationship deteriorated. He left, married somebody else, and she was single for years and years and years until we were able to work out what was wrong in her relationship with money so that she was only attracting users, not just from relationship partners, but friends too, who were seeing her as a bank instead of as a human being. So when I talk about relationship with money, I'm not only talking about lack of money, I'm talking about when money becomes a problem that gets in the way of love, when it becomes a tension. So one of my fundamental beliefs in life is that change, especially for women, but I think this can be true across the board, is that change happens at the speed of safety. If you are unconsciously protecting yourself from what you want, and I'm going to show you how that happens with money, you can do everything right consciously. And you'll see patterns of you make it, you lose it. You make it, you attract drama. Or you don't make it at all, no matter how qualified, how many steps you take, how many coaches you hire, how many business classes you take, how many, whatever you do, like everything you try and it falls flat. In any area of your life, if you keep doing the right stuff, everything you were taught to do, and you're doing it well, and you're still not seeing results. And I started with myself as the testing lab for this. And then I tried it out on thousands of other people. And we're talking about money, but we're also talking about love. And we're talking about other things too. When you see that pattern, I invite you to get curious. Get curious. You can leave the shame and the blame and all that kind of stuff over in a closet, or you can just hand it to me and I'll set it aside, get it out of the way for now. But get really curious, because that's when things change. So now that I've laid out all this framework, what I want to share with you today is the money monster and how to get rid of it and replace it, because that's what I'm known for. If you go to MorganaRay.com, tons and tons and tons of free and cheap resources to guide you through it.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, you may.
What does get curious look like?
Well, for me, I think that it's a place of hope. And I never really put it that way before, but this whole journey of looking at money as a monster and as a person and transforming relationship with money began almost 18 years ago when, you know, well-educated, certified coach with, you know, I had many high-profile movie star Hollywood clients and mountains of testimonials and good student background from me. So I was doing all of the marketing, website, business cards, all that kind of stuff, living in LA and taking all the classes on sales and stuff and doing everything I was told to do, right? That's the happy side. So looking at that, I should have been doing great. Honest to God, it got so that I was struggling to make $100 a month. On paper, I should have been making hundreds of thousands of dollars a month. But in reality, I was barely struggling to make $100 a month, which I think is pretty damn impressive. There should be a poster, like poster child of, failed business person. It was like I had superhuman powers to repel money. People wanted to work with me. And there was just something about me and money and my embarrassment to accept money and to discuss money that really, really repelled it. And I was 100% unconscious about it because I was working so damn hard doing everything every coach told me to do, whether it was business or metaphysical. And there was a point after I had just taken this class on sales and of overcoming sales objections, and I'm such a good student, 7 people in a row said they would hire me and 0 showed up and 0 paid. And I lost it. And I hit despair, just panic, despair, mountains of debt. I didn't see any way out. I was doing everything I was supposed to be doing. And after screaming, just lying on my bed and screaming my heart out and crying and wailing and having this just take me now, I don't want to live anymore, sort of just despairing tantrum, and cried myself out. I just hated the universe. The universe hated me. Really frightened. I finally knew what I wanted to do, was good at it, making nothing and seeing no way out. I got quiet when I finally cried myself out, and I got curious about what was inside of me that couldn't be with money, because it never occurred to me that I couldn't be with money, but obviously something was dramatically wrong. And that was when things shifted. It was immediately after that that I had a session with a coach. So here I'm not making enough money for my rent, but I still made sure that I had a coach. And he asked me some questions about money growing up, stuff that I hadn't thought of in decades, about lifelong fights between close family members and decisions I made as a child, because I would always choose love. And in so doing, I made a decision that I had, in choosing love, I was rejecting money. And I wasn't aware that I was doing that. And that is not when anything changed. It was the moment later when my coach asked me, Morgana, if money were a person, who would your money be? And I saw this person instantly. And it wasn't anybody I would have expected to be money. It was a big, scary, dirty, violent biker dude, bald, long sideburns, wife beater shirt. Not that there's anything wrong with guys who look like that, but this guy was clearly dangerous because I could feel it in every cell of my body. He terrified me. He was dangerous. He caused fights. And you can even hear like all the stuff that I felt about money that I never knew that I felt that way about money, that it was dangerous, that it was violent, that it was dirty. You know, it was like frightening and contemptible. And like, I just had to create distance, and I never knew that I was doing it, but it was a light bulb moment that, oh my God, no matter how many emails I sent out or brochures I printed or classes I took or meet lunches or coffees or every networking meetings I went to, it didn't matter how well I did any of it. If unconsciously money was this guy who was dangerous, I would unconsciously always find a way to create maximum distance. And I had this image in my mind's eye, hallelujah for an overactive imagination, I have to tell you, that we were at this outdoor event and I had my eye on him the whole time to create distance. And that's the first time in my life that my economic situation at that moment made sense. By the way, this was during a period when the economy was doing great. And interestingly, I started making the, you know, really big money, the multiple six figures is where it began. And I've made millions since, when the economy hit rock bottom in 2008. And I want to say that Because I want to separate your personal economy from the macro big economy, from the world economy, from even the local economy, your personal economy. I've been hearing after client after client after client who is doing great this year. It does not, you do not have to be sucked down with everything that's going on around you. Yes, we respect the rules of the game and the things that are going on. We respect the limitations. Just like if you were playing a video game, you respect that there are challenges. But we want to play a better game. So I realized that there was no way that I could ever accept money in my life or change the dynamic if that guy was my money. And I needed to end that relationship, period. I'm trying to fit my hands into the little frame here. So I got rid of the biker dude, the imaginary biker dude. And my immediate reaction was, yay, crap. I live in LA and I just rejected my only relationship with money. Now what? Ah. And that created a problem. Because if you've ever been in an abusive relationship, you're not in a hurry to get into another one. And by the way, I am speaking to the men as much as I'm speaking to the women. I've coached both. My language tends to skew to women because I'm a woman. But men get their hearts abused and broken too. Yeah, it's true. And by the way, the pain of money for men breaks my heart. Because women, we can date if we're broke. Men, it's real. We are really hard on you. Society is really hard on you. And the shame that goes with financial failure for men is really big. And it's castrating. And I really mean that. There's an interesting twist where women, when we are financially insecure, we get really hard. Like all the juicy, lovey, receptive, yummy feminine stuff kind of gets blocked off by this armor of self-protection. So we are not in our best place to be receptive to love or to make good romantic choices. The same for men. It's different, but it's like, by degrees. Same flavor, or sorry, different flavor, same dessert kind of thing. So I got rid of the money monster, and now I had a problem because I live in LA and I needed a relationship with money. So I thought to myself, well, who could I want in my life so much that I would be willing to have this person in my life, even if it's money? And by the way, you'll notice I keep making money a person. Because when we talk about money, it's abstract. Like, honest, between you and me, money is fake. We invented it. It could go away tomorrow. It keeps track of things, but it's a human invention. The idea that, you know, this phone is worth $1,200 and another phone is worth $300 is cuckoo. One purse is worth $5,000 and another purse you can get for $20. They do the same thing. It's ridiculous. It's just a shared delusion. But it's part of the game that we in our flesh suits in the modern world play. So we respect it. But the thing is, we can talk about money. We can talk about relationship with money. We can talk about beliefs around money for hours and hours and hours and make no change at all. The reason I make it a person is because a person is real. Like, we have real emotional vested life experience with people, good and bad, that we get to put into this. We get to put every bad, heartbreaking experience into the monster version of money. Because that makes it real, and we discover things that we didn't know we felt or believed when we make it a person. And when it's a person, we can break up. We can get rid of the person. in a way that we can't with an abstract concept, because there's just a feeling of reality, a depth of reality when we make it personal. It makes it far more specific, far more believable. We can imbue the monster with odors and like temperatures and all sorts of qualities that really make our skin crawl, so that we want to get rid of it. And so I got rid of the monster, and I knew that I needed a new relationship with money. So back to my story, asking myself, well, who could I want so much? And lo and behold, in my mind's eye popped up this tall, dark, handsome young man in a tuxedo carrying a bouquet of red flowers, who was adorable, just handsome, sweet, safe, romantic, and in love with me.
Where is he? I'm going to kill him.
He brought you to me.
Oh, right. Okay. Then he's all right. Then.
Yeah. Honestly, my current, most recent incarnation of my money honey does look like you.
Oh, good.
So back to the story. There's this imaginary guy who wants to woo me. And my first thought was, this is weird, because I never in my life ever thought of money wanting to woo me. And there was such a tenderness and such a vulnerability to him, like a real person. And I, in that moment, realized how much I had hurt him my whole life by pushing him away and rejecting him, just like a relationship with a real person. So first relationship, scary, resentful, need to create distance. This one, safe, wonderful, lovable for himself. There's nothing in this new relationship that I have to be with him. It's all sweet. And he doesn't feel like money. He feels like love. And I feel bad at how I've been breaking his heart all those years. So I said to him spontaneously, what do you need from me so you can stay with me? Because I could feel that he wanted to, and I wasn't letting him. And he said to me, another reason it's great to make, to give personhood, is you get answers, really helpful answers sometimes. He said in our first conversation, I need you to love me and stop treating me like a monster. And in that moment, I could flash back on every moment somebody asked me how much I charged and all the discomfort and shame and awkwardness that came up as if it were like some really icky, scary, repulsive, shameful monster that I shouldn't discuss. And so I made a commitment to him. And when he said, I want you to love me, it came with such vulnerability and sweetness. How could I deny him? Because it was coming from a place of love. And so we made a deal that next time he wanted to give me a gift, which typically would look like a potential client, I would say thank you. And the way I would say thank you is allowing that person to come in and pay me. And more specifically, when they would say, how much do you charge? I would tell them, instead of pushing it away like that sweater you really don't want. And I got tested 4 times the next day, like less than 24 hours. 4 people reached out to me and wanted to hire me, which would sound like a great thing if you're not me at that time, because I freaked out. And so I got on the phone with each of these people, 4 in one day out of the woodwork. Each of them wanted to hire me, and I could feel every cell in my body, which had been trained to push away the sale without any of my conscious awareness of it, wanting to like force feed a sample session or, dance around it. And with enormous power of will, I told them what I charged. And I shut up and I said, when do you want to begin? And they all hired me, and it was double what I had charged before. I felt like I was sitting on my hands and biting my tongue to just shut up and let people hire me. And every iteration got less painful, seriously, less painful. And then more came in that week, and more, and people just kept coming in to the point that I started having waiting lists and starting groups, started charging more and more, to the point now that I charge a really extraordinary fee. And then my clients, especially for my Bali retreat, which at this point is $15,000. They pay me this. And then at the end of the retreat, they go around the island telling strangers how much they paid and telling them that it was worth so much more. Speaking of Bali and money and love, I was talking about some of the like negative scenarios, and I wasn't naming names. But after you change your relationship with money, really interesting things can happen. I have a number of clients who were on the verge of divorce, like one foot out the door, because of money challenges affecting their marriage, who once they changed their own relationship with money, it triggered a change in their partner's relationship with money, and they fell back in love. And yeah, they started making more money too. Wish I could keep that from happening. There's my client in Arizona. There's another client, Mimi, that there's just Tara. There's a number of clients who, especially the married clients, where they fell back in love and the honeymoon never stopped once they changed their relationship with money, because changing your relationship with money is really changing your relationship with love and yourself. So some happy stories have come in recently is, you remember Marina, because she was here. She went with me to Bali last year, the last time I did it. We couldn't do it this year because of obvious reasons. She came for two things. She wanted to sell her company in Italy for a certain amount of money, and everybody was telling her that she couldn't. So she went with me to Bali, and she did. She sold her company for exactly what she wanted. And the other issue was she wanted to find her soulmate. And she did. She found her soulmate last year at Burning Man, I think after the retreat, the follow-up retreat at my house. And then they went back to Bali together in January. And then when COVID started to happen, they decided that they would stay there for the shutdown. And they had a baby last month that they're naming Athena. And then also who came, went with me to Bali and then came to our house last year for a Rich Witch reunion retreat here, Catherine, who got married for the very first time in her life in her 50s. She met her husband 2 weeks after she got home from Bali. So there is definitely a correlation between money and love. When women feel safe, and that's our job, our relationship with money is our job. Whether we are men or women, we can't look to anybody outside of ourselves for that. It's safer and easier to go into those really deep, dark monster places with a witness, with a safe, qualified witness who isn't going to judge you. And if it's somebody who can keep you on track, even better. Just a tip. But when we create that safety with our life ourselves, because that's really what money represents. It represents our worth. It represents our lovability, and it represents our safety. In some regards, our right to exist, with the way, especially in the United States, in our medical system. When we can create our own safety, things change around us. We demand less from another person that is not the other person's job to provide. So what I've noticed, which was a surprise that I didn't expect, is that women, when women feel safe with money, we relax. Where, you know, before we were dressed for battle because our lives were at stake. When we feel safe, before circumstances change at all and the relationship changes first, we relax and we become softer. And we have all this juicy, yummy, lovey energy that has been stirred by this handsome imaginary money honey. And by the way, that's a tip, is your money honey works best if it's a person of the gender you prefer and it's someone you're attracted to. Not necessarily your usual type, but it's somebody that you can have those yummy feelings for. And for like the spiritual yoga crowd, the sex and the money are both rooted in the same chakra, the second chakra, like right above survival is this yummy pleasure appetite for life, which is in the belly, for sex, for wealth, for beauty, for great experiences. It's tied in the same place. So women, we get softer and we become way more attractive to partners, to business, to money, to everything, include, and we get to say no to what doesn't belong. And my husband's going to sit on the couch because it's more comfortable. And I can see you there. Yeah, this show is more one-sided than usual. Just, I felt it was time that we had an episode about money and love and money monsters in particular. Men, when they slay their money monster, this is really fun to see because the energy is different. When a woman gets rid of her money monster, she's like, and she can just sort of collapse into the arms of her money honey and just be held and release the weight of the world. When a guy kills his money monster, his money honey shows up like, oh my God, my hero, you slayed the monster for me. And he's like, yes, I did. And he's like, his like chest puffs up and his voice deepens and he feels like the man he really always was meant to be. So, and that becomes attractive. That becomes attractive to partners and attractive to money and clients. And when you're already in a relationship, one of the funnest feedbacks that I get regularly is that your partner starts to look at you differently. And they have no idea the work that we did together, but I would get emails saying that, you know, from wives whose husbands fell back in love with them and didn't even know why. We're just like suddenly aroused, attracted again. And I had a male client years back who did tell his wife about the work we did. And his money honey was physically very different than her, although he was crazy in love with his wife. His money honey was just different. And she got really curious and really competitive. And it added some spice to their relationship. Because a frequent concern that comes up with clients is, ooh, this feels so real and I feel like I'm cheating on my spouse. And the good news is that your money honey is imaginary, has no body. So you can't really cheat. But if you are in a relationship, there is this, Devin, can you come here, please? There's this gorgeous, hot human honey that you can put all of that Eros energy into in physical form, right?
Yes.
Give me a kiss. So I don't know if we have any callers. Let me, I'm new to this technology, but if you have any,
oh, look at that.
Isn't that amazing?
That is like amazing.
Magic.
Right there.
Yeah. Like Gary Henson, was that who it is? Magic. So call in if you have any money monster questions or issues. You will not be on camera. You can make up your name if you like, but yeah, you can call in if you've got a money monster related question or anything really, honestly, because you know, we're here. Was there anything else? Oh yeah. So since we're talking about monsters, where does the monster come from? And I kind of took you through my story, but I didn't give you the steps and what actually happened when I reverse engineered it so that I could coach other people through my own transformation. You can sit on the couch again if you like. I adore you. So, where the monster comes from. I was hinting at it earlier when I was saying money isn't real, but what money represents is real, which is our own self-worth, our own sense of our lovability and our safety. And any pain or wounds in any of those areas, anything that has ever made us feel unworthy, unloved, or unsafe is going to show up. Now, honestly, it'll show up in lots of areas of life. I like to focus on money because money affects everything. Your job, your livelihood, you know, your vocation in life, your free time, your spirituality, your home, your all of your relationships, your health, your hobbies, everything gets affected by money. So it's a really, really great pain door for big transformation. So when we start to look for what is in the way and why you're having this problem, where does the monster come from? We always want to start with anything that has any charge that comes up for you. If you can't remember it, don't worry about it. You can come back to it a later time if you ever want to. You don't have to get it all at once. You just need to get enough to have a powerful enough experience to have a dramatic change. What I was already thinking ahead to is, and you do not want to traumatize yourself with the process so much that you dissociate. Because I had a client once who had such really deeply awful past experiences. And by the way, I've had a lot of clients with really dramatic past experiences. And we want to go deep. We want you to feel it. We want it to be like a full person experience, because the more you light up the neurology, I'm getting all sciencey here, the more changeable you are. It's a precept of neuroplasticity and neurolinguistic programming that if we really create a big experience, when we create a really dramatic money monster, so we don't want it to be an intellectual exercise because that doesn't work. That doesn't change anything. But if it's like that kind of thing, then we personify the experience to this monster, this person outside of yourself, because we're not going to get rid of you. We're going to get rid of the monster. So we make the monster outside of yourself. We don't allow the monster to be your parents, even if your parents were monstrous, because step number three, I'm jumping ahead. It'll make sense when we get there. But we want to make it real. And it looked like there was a little glitch with the broadcast there. And when you get enough of it, and it, especially stuff that doesn't look like it has anything to do with money, if you have an eating disorder, by the way, I just heard from a client of mine from almost 20 years ago. No, that's not true. 10 years ago, I think she said in the email. It's just been a long time. Had such a dramatic eating disorder that all the doctors said, based on her vitals, she should be dead. And nothing worked. Nothing worked. And it was very odd that she hired me, because money was not her primary issue. Really, the eating disorder and killing herself through it was. And we put that into the money monster. And by getting rid of the money monster, she got rid of the eating disorder. 10 years later, still free of it. I think that's one of the success stories that touches me the most deeply. And that brings up that the monster really is a death wish. And this is why it's so, so important that we uncover it and we personify it and we get rid of it. Because it shows up in money, because that's a great way to mess with you, but it shows up in anything that makes you not want to be here. So you uncover anything in your life experience, whether it's you personally or out in the world that you have trouble with, that makes you really not want to be part of this planet. And then we cast it on some outside person and we try to make it as personal. I recommend that your money monster is not somebody in your immediate life. It can either be purely imaginary, but make it as realistic, as meaning as human or relatable or believable as possible. I'm losing my voice. But not your parents, not anybody who's currently in your life, because, as I said, the monster ultimately represents your death wish. We have to get rid of it. It's like my mother was a huge Highlander fan. I never watched the show, but I do remember the phrase, there can only be one. So when we get to that moment where the monster is real to you, it'll be really clear that there can only be one of you that survives. And you have to choose who that's going to be. And I recommend you choose yourself and annihilate this monster that represents everything that doesn't belong in your life, that has no place in your life, that you reject, that you don't want. By any means necessary, because it's imagination. So if you want a lightsaber or a volcano, you got it. Whatever it takes to make this beast of a being that has caused so much pain in your life no longer exist. Imagine destroying this monster until there is nothing left, like no bloody bits to reconstitute into some later day, you know, monster zombie. And when that space is empty of this relationship, this negative relationship you've had your whole life, it will feel different. It may feel great and expensive. It may feel kind of scary. That's fine. It may feel empty. There may be some grief. That's fine. We just want it to be all gone, completely gone, 100% gone. If there's anything left, go back and get rid of that. That creates the empty space for a completely new relationship. And the bigger and badder the monster, the better, because it's like a slingshot. And it creates tension that propels you from where you don't want to be so that you can go to where you do want to be and have it stick and last. So that is how to destroy your money monster. And here's the big secret. The money monster is also a love monster. You can call it love monster. I actually did that and repeated the process for myself with my love monster and all of the things that made love unsafe for me. Got rid of my love monster and met Devin 2 months later. And now it's 8+ years later and 25 weddings and counting. If you have any questions about your own monster or want some help on that, you can call. And I am going to bring back my human honey, who's asleep on the couch. Hello. Because I think I've covered pretty much the monster.
Did we do the whole monster thing?
We did the whole monster thing.
How'd it go?
I haven't heard from anybody. I'm not sure about the new technology and how it all fits together, but
well, and let us know, write us a note or say hello, and then we'll know whether or not the live thing is the thing.
Yeah, we're this live streaming is new to us. So in terms of comments and calls, I'm really not sure how it all fits together, but there is something that I wanted to do before we close up. And you know what that is.
Oh yeah. That'll be strange.
So for a number of episodes, Devin has been talking about his music studio, which is, I love this. Like, what girl doesn't want to, you know, be with a hot musician?
Yes, that's it.
Right.
There we go.
So, so it's very complex with, you know, and just seeing how passionate you are. And that you have this creative outlet during COVID really inspires me. I admire that a lot.
Yeah, it's been a good process. So I can say that the following is something that I wrote. My daughter's going to be 21 tomorrow.
Oh, my God.
You want to feel old? There you go. So she's going to be 21 years old. And this song was for her. And we didn't even really plan this. We thought this more about monsters and Halloween. But the song was for her. Her birthday is tomorrow. It's a pleasant coincidence to go with the whole Halloween atmosphere, right?
Yeah, and the song is No Monsters. A producer slapped a photo on it, which is me, not Devin. But we're gonna close out by listening to, what is it called?
No Monsters.
All right, here we go. I love that song. So you want to talk a little bit about it?
I wrote it many, many moons ago. I recorded it with actually a couple of buddies of mine, Rich Thomas, who's now living, I think, in South Carolina. Rich.
Is he the one I had the date with?
Yeah, no, that's right. He actually dated a musician friend of mine before us. Rich and Daryl Grandma on drums, who was, he was actually a cruise ship drummer and visited like 75 countries while sort of like playing drums like on Tuesdays and Thursdays on a cruise ship. That's not a bad gig if you can get that gig. He was a great, great drummer. And I think he's got a family of his own. Last time I saw him, he was doing really well. So that's kind of fun stuff for me. And obviously the inspiration is my beautiful now, what is that? She's like legal drinking age.
In
crazy
about three more hours.
About three more hours, midnight tonight. So.
And how do you feel about that?
Oh my gosh, that is a measure of insanity that I can't even begin to describe. That is something that's, you know, I remember, I mean, listen, anybody who's out there who's a parent probably has these fond memories of the diapers and the easier times. And, you know, my sister's is a big fan of telling me the bigger the kid, the bigger the problem. And honestly, she's never been any of those kinds of things.
And she's like 4'11".
Yeah, no, she's indeed. So she's a tiny little thing. But, you know, she grew up to be a great young lady, and, you know, and being somebody who's out in the world. She's a senior in school and is crazy proud. And obviously, I'm going to be writing a little bit more about that, you know, to her this evening. She wanted a handwritten card. So, you know, she'll also be getting gifts as well.
Yeah. So what do you have to say about monsters?
What do I have to say about monsters? Well, I mean, I think a lot of them, I mean, part of the stories, the story that I just, you know, the story that was inspired by that song is it's about sort of like the monsters that we create within ourselves, right? And how do we be of service to the person who's experiencing that? I think it's a lot easier to kind of put down in a song when you're kind of like talking about hopefully being the hero of a small child. But I think those things manifest for us in all kinds of ways in terms of what monsters work. I mean, obviously, that's been a key element to the work that you do.
Mm, yeah. I give the money monster really bad rap because, honestly, if the ultimate natural outcome of the monster's agenda, whether it's money or love or health or whatever, is your demise. But at the same time, it's also a hidden ally, because it is like facing it and going through it is the key to everything you wanted. One of my favorite sayings is that fear is the one thing in the world that gets smaller when you run towards it.
Yes, you might have heard that from me. And, you know, I think it also is important, like, if yes, it's an ally to some degree, but I also think that the monster draws attention to the thing that needs to be addressed.
And that's how it's the ally. That's why you don't skip it to go, okay, money, honey, money loves me, money is coming to me, blah, blah, blah. You just, that, hey, look, if it works, go for it. I will never knock anything that works for somebody, but I have never seen that work. There's a lot of rejection of our victim experiences and our fears and our human experiences. And I think we have them for a reason, or we wouldn't have them. And there's a sacredness to it. So if you've been through hell and back, you've already been there, you've paid the admission, now use it for your highest good.
Right. Well, at the end of the day, these are all, to me anyway, these are all part of lessons. And I think the more lessons we get through, the more grace that we have in our lives, the more opportunity we get to be of love and service to those around us. And I think that's really important, kind of like critical thing that that we do. I mean, we all do that in one way or another, whether or not we are sort of like somebody like my wife, who kind of helps people tackle their money issues, you know, where that's been kind of created in a human form, or not, or whether or not you're, you know, delivering mail or just doing good work and being a good friend out in the world.
By the way, delivering mail is heroic these days.
Oh my
Thank you. So I think we're out of time. We will be back next week at 5 p.m. Pacific time. You can catch up on more of our weddings, because it's been a lot more than the 11 that you saw in the beginning.
Yeah, that's true.
Stay in touch with us and download Devin's free ebook, Women Are Smarter Than Men and Other Secrets Marriage-Minded Women Need to Know, because it's brilliant, at crazysexymidlifelove.com. And we will see you next week for some more Crazy Sexy Midlife Love. Mwah!